Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And my fellow citizens, to a few of us here today, this is a solemn and most momentous occasion. And yet in the history of our nation, it is a commonplace occurrence. The orderly transfer of authority as called for in the Constitution routinely takes place as it has for almost two centuries, and few of us stop to think how unique we really are. In the eyes of many in the world, this every four-year ceremony we accept as normal is nothing less than a miracle. Mr. President, I want our fellow citizens to know how much you did to carry on this tradition. By your gracious cooperation in the transition process, you have shown a watching world that we are a united people, pledged to maintaining a political system which guarantees individual liberty to a greater degree than any other. And I thank you and your people for all your help in maintaining the continuity which is the bulwark of our republic.
This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I ask you to share with me today the majesty of this moment. In the orderly transfer of power, we celebrate the unity that keeps us free. Each moment in history is a fleeting time, precious and unique. But some stand out as moments of beginning, in which courses are set that shape decades or centuries. This can be such a moment. Forces now are converging that make possible for the first time the hope that many of man's deepest aspirations can at last be realized. The spiraling pace of change allows us to contemplate within our own lifetime advances that once would have taken centuries. In throwing wide the horizons of space, we have discovered new horizons on Earth. For the first time, because the people of the world want peace, and the leaders of the world are afraid of war, the times are on the side of peace.
When our founders boldly declared America's independence to the world and our purposes to the Almighty, they knew that America, to endure, would have to change. Not change for change's sake, but change to preserve America's ideals, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
The peaceful transfer of authority is rare in history, yet common in our country. With a simple oath, we affirm old traditions and make new beginnings. As I begin, I thank President Clinton for his service to our nation. And I thank Vice President Gore for a contest conducted with spirit and ended with grace.
Let it be said by our children's children that when we were tested, we refused to let this journey end, that we did not turn back, nor did we falter. And with eyes fixed on the horizon and God's grace upon us, we carried forth that great gift of freedom and delivered it safely to future generations.
We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Together, we will determine the course of America and the world for many, many years to come. We will face challenges. We will confront hardships. But we will get the job done.
This is America's day. This is democracy's day. A day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
All right, it's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. So this past Wednesday, President Joe Biden became the 46th president of the United States. Now, there's a book out there called I Do Solemnly Swear, Presidential Inaugural Addresses of the Last Five Decades. Focus is on these critical addresses comprehensively analyzed from all angles, including the political climate and election campaign dynamics. And this year marks the 60th anniversary of President Kennedy's inauguration on January 20th, 1961, and the 40th anniversary of President Reagan's inauguration on January 20th, 1981. Aaron Call is the author of this book and is also the director of debate at the University of Michigan. He's also a political commentator. Aaron, welcome in.
It's great to be back with you.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us again. So the critical speeches on Inauguration Day really set the tone for incoming administrations. What propelled you originally to look back at the speeches of our most recent U.S. presidents?
Yeah, it was just a bit of dumb luck. I was doing some research and just found that in general, there was kind of a dearth of information in books about things like the great inaugural addresses of our time, the good State of the Union addresses, addresses to a joint session of Congress. And so it just really shocked me how these speeches have gone back to George Washington in the 1700s. And yet in the popular press, there wasn't a lot out there. And so, being a director of debate, having a lot of debate and communication professionals as friends, we just kind of started on, this book and others to just chronicle the history of the addresses, kind of what made them work and revered, and then also how that history of some of these really successful speeches could inform some of the presidents, starting back with 2017 and Donald Trump, and then this time with Joe Biden.
And now President Biden delivered his address on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, during what has been a tumultuous and unprecedented time in American history. It looked a little different this year, didn't it?
It did. I mean, it was just 2 weeks ago, over 2 weeks ago, that the rioting and the mob at the Capitol broke windows. Five people ended up dying. And so that made the face of this inaugural address just so much different. Normally, millions of people will be on the National Mall to watch the address. This year, it was surrounded by fences and closed, and you had armed National Guards providing security. But in some ways, I think Biden was determined to continue to make sure that the inaugural address happened in public, was at the west front of the Capitol, which was an entrance that was stormed and destroyed over 2 weeks ago, to show that despite attempts to stop the peaceful transfer of power, that was still going to continue. And so, yes, this definitely was different. Normally, the inaugurational committee hands out hundreds of thousands of tickets. This year was just limited to one per congressperson plus a special guest, no live audience. But the scene was the same since Ronald Reagan in 1981 kind of moved to this west front of the Capitol building. And it was definitely a once-in-a-lifetime kind of address. We've had in the past, Abraham Lincoln gave two inaugural addresses during the very beginning and just before the conclusion of the Civil War. Franklin Delano Roosevelt with the Great Depression and the onset of World War II. And George W. Bush in 2001 after an election that was really close and went all the way to the Supreme Court in December and was decided by just 537 votes. So it's not totally unprecedented, but I would say the combination of all the factors that dealing with a once-in-a-100-year pandemic, economic and racial strife, what just happened to the Capitol, a contested election. We've seen some bits and pieces in the past, but never one president having to deal with so many simultaneous crises in the run-up to this really important address.
Yeah, what is your analysis of President Biden's speech? You know, obviously, this country is so divided. There seemed to be some good intent, obviously, to bring those people together, whether they voted for him or not.
Yes. I mean, that's been the theme of the entire inauguration, day and week, this America United theme, and they've done things surrounding it to try to, increase that potential for unity. Yesterday, kind of trying to, at the Lincoln Memorial and Reflection Pool, honoring those that had died from the pandemic. After the address, going to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier with past presidents, both Republicans and Democrats. And so this has been a theme. It was part of Biden's campaign. And even if you look back to his speech at the Democratic National Convention, talking about being president for all, no more red and blue states, his victory address on November 7th, this was a big theme of him and part of the reason that he won the election. So making that the big mantra of the address was not unexpected and pretty easy for him to do because it was a central part of his campaign and really his political career. He's known as somebody that's pretty moderate in the center and has good relationship with people of both parties. And in the address, he did go out of his way to say he's going to be the president for everybody, no matter how people voted. I thought he came off as authentic, his commitment to that. And he usually is pretty plain spoken and says what's on his mind. And so he asked the nation to give his administration a chance. There's the 74 million people that voted for President Trump are not all of a sudden going to come into his corner after a 15 or 20 minute address. But I think he just asked to, let's see how the presidency goes, what legislation gets passed, what the first 100 days look like. And that's all you can ask to, have people, not everybody, but, a good portion of those that maybe voted for Trump or somebody else to at least not shut the door on the administration and have an open mind going forward.
We're talking to Aaron Call, Director of Debate at the University of Michigan, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. Day player on 720 WGN, we're talking to Aaron Call, Director of Debate at the University of Michigan, and author of the book, I Do Solemnly Swear, Presidential Inaugural Addresses of the Last Five Decades. We talked a little bit about President Biden's speech. There was a lot of distractions to me. Number one, the quietness, the cameras would back out and show just the emptiness of the space. And really, Donald Trump was the first living president not to personally witness the peaceful transfer of power in over 150 years. I mean, that absence was pretty known.
Definitely. Yes, going all the way back to Andrew Johnson, who was impeached and blamed his successor on that and so had no intention of ever showing. Before that, you have to go all the way back to John Adams, John Quincy Adams. And so this is something that's very rare. And the whole point of the inaugural address is to show the peaceful transition of power between two administrations, especially if there are different parties. And so, when that is the whole purpose of the event and the symbolism, everything is removed, that it does really take away from the event. But I think initially President Biden wanted Donald Trump to show up and thought it'd be good. But eventually, certainly post what happened at the Capitol, even he said that it was probably the right decision to make. And that he wouldn't be missed. Vice President Pence did honorably represent the administration, and I was a little bit surprised that President Biden didn't obviously acknowledge his attendance, but didn't have anything nice to say about Pence and his handling of a very complicated electoral challenge and the counting of the votes and how just he handled that day, the infamous day on January 6th. And so that's been something going back. It's usually pretty common for the speaker during the inaugural address to say a nice thing about the preceding administration. There's a few presidents who have skipped it, President Trump and President Reagan, but all the other ones for the last several decades have done so. But no, that didn't happen today. It was really a forward-looking speech. It didn't really dwell on the last several weeks or year or even the last 4 years of the Trump administration. It talked about the future, navigating the pandemic, coming together as a country, and was more kind of forward-looking, optimistic, as opposed to looking back, which I think was good. But yes, as you mentioned, not having that crowd in the National Mall, very unique for the circumstances. That was the whole reason that the speech was moved by Reagan to the West Front, just because of the scenic backdrop and the fact that you could have such a large audience. In some ways, it was nice that, 4 years ago, we had a big controversy over the crowd size compared to previous years, and the National Archives got involved and things like that. So it's nice to start the new administration without having to worry about any of those tertiary things. But in some ways, I do think the address was a little bit less electric because of the lack of that large audience. I mean, politicians feed off the crowd at these speeches and debates and things like that. And so, it was a little bit somber, and a large part of that was likely due to just the unique nature of this address and the crowd.
Well, let's look back at other speeches. I mean, George W. Bush won the 2000 election by only 537 votes in Florida, right? And despite the rancor surrounding a bitterly fought election, but Bush used the opening of his inaugural address to thank President Clinton for his service to the nation and compliment Vice President Gore, who had beaten Bush in the popular vote, on his spirit and grace. And those moments are important.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that, if you remember, and even though it was 20 years ago, was so contentious, and the entire Bush versus Gore decision that was went one way in the Florida Supreme Court, and then it was reversed in a very partisan fashion, a 5-4 vote in the Supreme Court, which was controlled by Republicans, appointed judges at that time. There was a lot of consternation in the country, and people even encouraging Gore to continue fighting even after that Supreme Court and try to take it back to the local courts in the state of Florida. And Al Gore took the high road at that point. At that point, he was pretty young and thought that he'd likely have additional opportunities in the future and didn't want to seem like a sore loser and thought the balance of power was very important. And as you mentioned, that inaugural address, both the past president and Gore's kind of graciousness toward that were talked about. And just even to today, you're seeing the good relationship between the Bushes and the Clintons and them all being present today and then going to the Chamber of the Unknown Soldiers shows that even from that, they've still been able to have a good relationship even despite all of that. And so there was the famous quote from that address in 2001 talking about angels in the whirlwind. And yeah, that address by Bush was received very well. Obviously, he went on to win two terms. And these addresses provide momentum to the first 100 days, the address to the joint session of Congress, which comes up in about a month or two, then going to the midterm elections, re-election. And so it is only a 15 or 20 minute speech, but the tone, the reaction, all those really set up momentum for the future of the presidency and sometimes end up defining the presidency in itself.
President Andrew Johnson was impeached, and he used rhetoric to create division at that time, too, and blamed incoming President Grant for his impeachment and never had any intention of attending the inaugural either. So kind of some similarities there.
Yes, definitely. Even though it was over 150 years ago, the situation is very appropriate to what happened. I guess in this case, this was the second time Trump had been impeached. No other president had been impeached twice. But yes, you just have to go back to that, to the reason that he didn't attend. He was impeached, and actually Johnson didn't even run as the candidate the next time because the impeachment, he wasn't convicted, but it went so poorly, he wasn't even his party's nominee, and so didn't even get to run there in that election, and never forgave Grant, and didn't at that time. In fact, that many years ago, the both the outgoing president and the incoming one used to ride to the Capitol in the same vehicle And that definitely was never going to happen, and he didn't attend it since. And actually, the Grant, Ulysses Grant, that inaugural is considered one of the more famous ones, and he was very humble and rose to the occasion. And so, you know, Biden's, depending on how history judges it, just those circumstances being so similar is eerie in a way.
FDR declared war on the Great Depression, as you said, and, you know, he was confident the country would revive and prosper and said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And those are words people needed. Abraham Lincoln, as you mentioned, gave his first address a month before the start of the Civil War. And then 4 years later, you know, his second address, I think, was like 700 words. And he just wanted to bring people together.
Yes, yes, and his Lincoln's oratory skills were just amazing. I mean, the 700 words, the second one is even considered more impressive than the first.
Yeah.
Maybe the best inaugural address of all time, with, you know, talking about malice and yes, he just shows, you know, that you don't have to have an hour long address to have something that's real meaningful and very positive. I mean, William Henry Harrison had an 8,000 word address that lasted over an hour. And he caught pneumonia a month later and died because he didn't wear a hat and gloves and it was in the winter. But Lincoln's second inaugural address was maybe the best of all time, with 700 words. The, you know, the Gettysburg address was 200 or 300 words. So sometimes it's just, you know, it's the eloquence, it's the vocabulary, and that can, you know, do a lot. And it's all about, yes, unifying the country. In that time, Civil War, especially for the second one, 130,000 troops had died, and we're not there at this point, but the divisions and what happened with the aftermath of the election, the storming of the Capitol, those were things really tearing apart the democracy. And I thought that was something that was good in the address, talking about, you know, the America's the best country in the world and has democracy, but it's fragile and you can't take it for granted. And, you know, when things, if the tone and tenor doesn't change and people, you know, don't become more civil, then it's not inevitable that we have this system of government and things can go awry. And so he, I think, was really, you know, made a persuasive case about changing the page, the ways in which different people communicate, kind of changing the media ecosystem, which can mislead some. I mean, it's a tall task because those are things that have existed and will be tough to deal with. But certainly he successfully addressed what the problem is and the dangers of it if some of those things aren't corrected going forward.
Now, President Jimmy Carter needed to address the public's trust of government, you know, just coming out of Nixon and Ford. Again, very divided, a close election, you know, very much like we just went through.
Yes, and that's a great analogy because, you know, Ford obviously had become president after Richard Nixon left and then pardoned him and then ran against Carter. Carter won a close election that was just, you know, could have been determined by a few states in Hawaii, and Ford decided not to call for a recount, even though it was within his right to do so. And then some of these few states were just determined by a few thousand votes, even closer than this election. And but didn't for the veterans of the country, didn't think he'd be viewed as a legitimate president if he did so. And then Carter had to come in after that, after we just had this, you know, Nixon resigning and the pardon and everything, and did a good job. And it didn't end up that way. But, you know, there, after what happened at the Capitol, you know, there was talk of President Trump resigning, whether Mike Pence would pardon him. There's still some talk about, you know, potentially to unite the country, Joe Biden pardoning him. So there definitely were. Or calling to an end to the Senate trial. So there definitely were a lot of parallels between that situation, what happened with Nixon, and then this one, because it followed Trump and his second impeachment, talk about leaving office, the threat of removal. So even though that was, you know, several decades ago, a lot of the same fact pattern that happened was present in Biden's inaugural address.
The book is I Do Solemnly Swear, Presidential Inaugural Addresses of the Last 5 Decades by author Aaron Call. He's the director of debate at the University of Michigan. Always a pleasure, Aaron, and always appreciate your insight. Thank you again.
I've done now in the last 4 years, through all the books, probably thousands of interviews. But I will say you were the one, kind of the first one, that really gave the book a chance, and you put it on a platform and elevated it. So I have a sentimental place, you know, for this show, because it's really, in a way, it's kind of where it all started.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And it's great to hear. And I appreciate that as well. And please reach out to me if you've got anything you ever want to share, talk about, or anything new coming out. I'd be happy to have you back on, of course.
All right. Will do. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Aaron. All right. Take care. Thank you again.
Take care.
Bye-bye.